Thanks. What he really means to say is that I want to do the presentation because I need a job pretty soon, so I need to get some face time. But I really wanted to present this stuff. It's kind of a story that I've been trying to tell that I've kind of grown attached to. And so we've been looking at kind of using some different tool sets to kind of combine kind of ecology and soils data to help kind of decision-making kind of support systems, which we're kind of focusing on ecological site descriptions. And so kind of this melding of data and tools I'm calling pedoecological mapping, because it's fun to use goofy words. So the background, so ecological site descriptions, what are they? So they're basically a way to group soils by kind of a similar ecological potential and similar responses to pressures, so disturbance or drought management. And so kind of the crux behind ecological sites is that you need to come up with a reference state, so some kind of target vegetation community that you need to manage for, so it's kind of an optimal state. And so in general, the USDA has used ecological site descriptions mostly in rangelands, but now kind of moving into the forested regions of the eastern U.S. Kind of through the soil survey infrastructure, they link ecological sites to soil map components, which get a little crazy, which aren't actually explicitly mapped in our soil survey right now. So a lot of them are aggregated within map units. And thanks, Jim. So one of the solutions we can take to get there is we can try and disaggregate our soil maps. So we're mapping at the same scale as we're attributing ecological sites. And that often can help. But there's some times where that's actually not enough, because we have some soil classes or soil series here in the U.S. that are stretched a little broadly in their concept. They have a pretty wide range of soil properties. And sometimes that's not enough to isolate an ecological site. So one thing we've been kind of thinking about, and we've kind of had to employ some of the areas we're looking at in the Central Appalachians, is coming up with a linking soil property. So how can we determine a reference state based on some kind of soil limitation, or even better yet, a pedomemory property that actually something in the soil morphology or in isotopes that can actually link vegetative communities to a site. And so what we found, and we've been able to show, and this is kind of was part one of this presentation the other day, is we've been able to link spudic morphology to historic red spruce hemlock subalpine communities in the Central Appalachians as a way to kind of recreate the past vegetation there before Euro-American disturbance. It kind of came through with the railroad era. There's a lot of logging and a lot of fires that shifted the forest composition. So we were able to create a pretty good spatial model of spodic, basically expression of spodic morphology. And so that's that map you see here on the left with kind of blue values indicating a high probability of spodic morphology. And so this model worked out pretty well, and we validated it kind of when we hardened the classification, so about 70-80% through some independent validation methods. So we felt pretty good about representing the variability in the landscape. And so what we're seeing is kind of this gradient of soils and vegetation communities, where you have on the left kind of a well-developed inceptisol or poorly developed oltisols, and it's generally hardwood communities. And in the middle, you have kind of an integrated site where you're starting to see some spotted properties, and you have a mixed vegetation, kind of a mixed hardwood conifer. And on the right, you have pretty well-expressed spodosol. And so we kind of came up with an index from 0 to 2 to kind of that all the field scientists who are helping us out with this kind of give a rating to each soil they went to. And so we looked at some forest plots where we dug soil pits, and we wanted to look at kind of our model. So we kind of overlaid, we attributed all these points with our model values from that spatial model you saw over here. And then we looked at that versus that field spotic intensity. And so basically, all these letters you see here are plots that we went out and collected data on. They're symbolized by their dominant forest vegetation, so hardwood, mixed hardwood conifer or conifer. And so we saw kind of this positive relationship which we expected, so you know, higher probability of spotic properties as our index of spotic properties that we saw in the field went up. So that kind of shows us also that our model was working pretty good. We also use this to kind of split up our sites conceptually into ecological sites, so those groupings. And so we started up with these higher probabilities. So it's kind of, we think that this is kind of grouping this more spotted conifer forest ecological site. And you notice that there's kind of a spread of these sites up here. And what we think has happened is that some of the visual cues and field cues we use to make these calls about spotting intensity are dynamic. So you have organic matter that can kind of flux in and out of a system with conversions and E horizons, which can change pretty quickly when you change forest compositions and you have a lot of disturbance. And so that's kind of how we ended up coming up with this break conceptually, is just kind of looking at the current vegetation, thinking about historic vegetation, and then splitting them up. And so kind of the cool thing that we've been able to do working with the Forest Service is use that spatial model of spotic soil properties to give them some kind of target areas. So they have some areas where they're looking to restore red spruce, and we were able to kind of overlay the areas they're looking at and kind of help them prioritize them with a suitability map. So we translated the spotic probability map into kind of suitability classes for them. And so they've been actually currently using that to help prioritize their restorations efforts. But we wanted to go even a little deeper than that into what I'm calling the pedoecological mapping, where we can dig into kind of the nuts and bolts of ecological sites and the descriptions into the state and transition models. And so basically you have kind of this flowchart diagram where you have the reference state, so your target state, which in this case we were looking at this red spruce eastern hemlock ecological site. And then you have different degraded states is what we'll call them. And so you notice these two have pathways back and forth. So these are areas that we think we can restore back to that reference state via thinning hardwoods to release the spruce that are in the understory if they're there. Or if they're not, then you plant spruce and then eventually manage to kind of open up canopy gaps for them. And so the other thing we were interested in is, well, what's going to happen to especially forest floors kind of as a measure of a surrogate of soil organic carbon stocks. And we thought that from the literature it seemed like they would adjust pretty quickly. And so we looked at some of our plot data, forest composition, so conifer importance being a relative measure of composition of eastern hemlock and red spruce versus hardwood. And so we regressed that against O horizon depth that we observed at all our plots, and we saw this pretty uniform, nice positive relationship. So it seemed to kind of indicate for us that these O horizons were adjusting pretty quickly to the forest composition, which also kind of tells us that, all right, if we adjust the forest composition with our restoration efforts, we should be able to add O horizon depth. That's our hypothesis, which is a pretty positive thing to be able to do in a restoration scenario. And so we wanted to translate that relationship into actual carbon stock terms. And so we summarized some of the data we have on O horizons at these sites to get a carbon density. So then we can multiply that times an expected O horizon depth accumulation from a restoration to get a carbon stock estimate for a restoration scenario. And so the next thing we need to do is figure out, okay, let's look at this spatially and see if we can determine where our degraded sites are. And so luckily we have some good recent forest inventory data. And so we looked at that data and our plots, and we were able to come up with kind of estimates of that conifer importance down here you see for a mixed. So this would be kind of a transition between that degraded state and the reference state and then a hardwood state. And so from that, we're able to compute these deficits. So these deficits are basically, we looked at the ecological site description and came up with a target conifer importance value. And that's kind of part of the data that's put in that ecological site description, which is a pretty big document that you can use as a land management planner to kind of figure out what you want to do with the site. And so we understood what we thought the deficits were, so how much conifer we wanted to add to these particular areas. And then we said, okay, let's map it. And so you see this map on the left. All the areas in color that aren't blue are in that conifer forest ecological site. And then we overlaid the forest inventory on top of that, and we were able to actually map the state within that state and transition model. And so you see the red and orange areas, which cover a pretty good portion of that actual ecological site at this point in time, are those degraded areas that we want to try and restore. And so from understanding the aerial extents of those, we can actually make calculations based on these areas, the conifer importance deficit, and the correlated actual over-horizon increase, and then you compute that all together with the carbon density estimate that we had to actually estimate how much carbon we think we end up putting back into the soil if you restore these areas to red spruce. And so just for the map units we looked at, which were kind of a little microcosm of this system across West Virginia, we were able to calculate that we thought about 0.52 teragrams would get put back into the soil just in the O-horizons by restoring red spruce. And then we tried to extrapolate that a little bit because we know kind of the same system across a pretty good portion of West Virginia if you're at the same elevation as we were at or higher. And we were able to come up with a number of 6.62 teragrams. And we think that's actually a pretty conservative estimate because there's some areas that are higher elevation than the areas where we actually computed this data. And they tend to have even deeper O-horizons when you have a pretty healthy reference state. So kind of to summarize, this pedo-ecological mapping concept kind of allows us to create a really spatially explicit management planning scenario. And from that, we were able to, through understanding some of the ecological dynamic at these sites, come up with the potential value in carbon terms of these restoration scenarios using this framework. And we understand that from the literature and from what we've seen, that significant soil organic carbon was lost due to kind of the railroad era disturbance. And we think that a lot of it could be restored under these management scenarios. And so that number, the 6.62 teragrams, is equivalent to 56.4 million barrels of oil, which sounds like a lot, but it's not a ton when you put that in perspective of, you know, global emissions and whatnot. But it's something. And so some of the other stuff that we've started looking at is we have some radiocarbon dates at the bottom of these O-horizons. So there's basically 10 centimeters of O-horizon. We have charcoal at the bottom. And the timing of that makes us think that you can add this 10 centimeters of O-horizon in about a century. So that's pretty quick in some respects. But so that gives us some hope to be able to employ some of these restoration scenarios for climate change, mitigation, and whatnot as like a piece to that big puzzle. The practical management might end up being a little bit larger number. But it's definitely, you know, something to have hope in. And so we have some further work underway to kind of refine and extend the spatial inference of this work kind of across the Appalachian region and up into New England, hopefully eventually. And we also need to look at the mineral soil organic carbon stocks, which we think will kind of be a whole other pool to add to this. Just haven't got to that yet. And also want to look more quantitatively at kind of aluminum translocation peaks as kind of a more quantitative surrogate for posilization and that spotic intensity. And so broader implications, most areas around the world have been disturbed in some way or another anthropogenically, and a lot of these shifts have resulted in soil organic carbon loss, and increased mean annual soil temperature, and particularly along the temperate subalpine boreal transition. We think that this similar methods and thinking about this, thinking about these shifts, not just from disturbance, but also from climate change. There's some pretty large soil organic carbon stocks at risk. It's definitely something to take into consideration. So thanks for your attention, and see if we have any time for questions here.